Hello, everyone. This is Gil with the Padawan Limited podcast, the Star Wars Limited trading card game podcast and YouTube channel. Today, I am joined by the ruggedly handsome Ooh. Corey and Rob. How are you guys doing?
Hello there.
Hello. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment. I will never not accept a compliment like that. So
I should have oiled and trimmed my beard.
I know. I wish I could grow a facial hair that long, but I'm Asian. So
I feel your pain there.
I can't do the wispy fumation.
I mean, like, I'm not the kind of Asian that can get that length. There are obviously Asians that could do that. All right, enough self sabotage. So a couple pieces of logistics. We are almost to round 4 of the Padawan Unlimited League. Check that out if you have not. If you don't know what that is, join the Discord and read up on it, because there's a lot to go on. It's been really fun. Common only league. I love it. We had the winner last week, Mr. Meyer, who won the cheapest deck at like 70 cents constructed. So that was amazing. We're going to host the top four soon. So that's great. If you have not checked out our previous video last week, where we did like a box break of some stuff that FFG found us. FFG gave us. Thank you for all. Thank you to FFG for doing that, by the way.
Yes.
We are giving away cards in those packs. So check out that video. Yes. Check out the links. You know, not many people said, hey, if people don't want product, that's fine. But we only got this because of you, the listeners, and we are eternally thankful for you all. So appreciate you. But if you're a new listener, watch that video, but also please remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review, or do any of that positive stuff. It really helps out the channel as we grow slowly and steadily this Star Wars Limited community.
Yes. Okay. And just real quick, we will be sending out that constructed lightsaber soon. So if you're wondering where it is, it hasn't got out yet, but it is going to be going out this end of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Corey, for taking care of the shipping for that. Appreciate you. Okay. So we do segments here. Again, if this is the first time you're listening, we go collection, meta, and then some type of main topic. Today's main topic is going to be deck building. I think it's appropriate since we're hitting the new set. So we'll talk about a little bit about everything we're doing, some good practices, some stuff we're working on, but we'll talk about that there at that time. So Corey, going on to collections, what do you got for us?
Yeah, collections. Well, it's a exciting one because this week we actually have new cards. A new set was in pre-release. Technically, when this podcast comes out, I don't think that the set is actually officially released, right? Yeah.
Nope.
But it is during pre-release, we do get to get the cards and purchase packs and cases or boxes or whatever you're going for. And I know some of you guys have gotten some things, and I have also gotten a couple things as well. I got a couple Carbonite boxes, and I was 2 for 2 in showcases.
Tell me more.
Because these guys don't know which ones. I didn't tell them yet, but I've got Governor Price here.
Okay. All right. She's on Lothal, right? That's her Lothal picture.
Yep.
And then I also had gotten the Jabba.
Oh, you pulled the Jabba.
The Jabba? I didn't know. Dude, the Jabba looks good. I think that Jabba looks really, really friggin' good.
Yeah, I like this Jabba a lot because he's a little more cartoony, but he's got a little bit of a smirk going on. He's like doing this little hand thing where he's like, oh
yeah. I really like the art on this one, and honestly, as a leader, he's actually very, very interesting, but we'll talk about that in a little bit here. But for me, Gil, I only purchased one Carbonite, and I did hit on it, and Karma reared its ugly head. I was bad talking Satine, and guess who showed up? Her day drinking ass turkey goblin.
Keep it clean, Rob. This is a family friendly show.
Yeah. So Satine reared her head, and I now am the proud owner of a day drinking turkey.
Hey, I like that leader. I want to. If once the prices go down, I'll try to trade you for it. So I actually pulled a showcase as well, not in a Carbonite box or regular box. I pulled it in a pre-release kit.
Whoa.
So I got super lucky. I did 3 pre-releases this past weekend, 3 different stores. And on the third store, first box, first pack, I ripped open a Bail Organa showcase.
Very cool.
Oh my God.
That I like so this cool. showcase because it's not just him. I like when there's more going on in there.
Yeah,
other
yeah.
people.
Yeah, like the Hondo yeah. showcase. I yeah. love that one. That his crew.
It does look really good.
Yep.
And I think that one's how much is that worth still? Let's look. That, I'm gonna look that
it's
up.
It's probably
even
not
even
much,
the Jabba. What's interesting, like with Jabba, is like on the leader side, he's got the little guy in the back there.
Oh yeah.
And then on the unit side, it's just a blown up picture of him more in focus. But
yeah.
I do like when they do that. That's cool. Yeah. Is Hondo still like going for like what, 50, 60? I
feel like he's probably... $67. That's actually
okay.
not bad.
Yeah.
It's good. Price. Yeah. Are you guys gonna invest in any more like Carbonite stuff, you think?
I'm not certain. I didn't love the treatment for the prestiges. Let me rephrase it. I didn't love the prestiges for half of them. I didn't really like the bounty puck ones. With the exception of, and I'll just kind of show, I have a couple of them here. The second level treatment on the bounty pucks looks really, really good.
So,
but go ahead.
No, sorry. So tier two prestige cards for the right. bounty pucks.
With the foiling.
The foiling.
With the foiling.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So like, sorry, but like the regular one, it doesn't pop. So I've actually got two Libertines so you can see them side by side. So like, this is the regular one where it's very flat.
Make sure you check the YouTube video, guys.
Yep.
For and you then, listeners out there,
but,
he's
but
got
yeah,
the cards
but comparatively,
up on
you get a lot more depth, and it looks like a hollow puck with the tier two.
So I think that like when I think I see what you're saying, because the tier ones, it's instead of foiling, it's just a white background, and so it falls really flat. In that sense, I think that's what you're trying to say. Like that's one of the
correct.
Things that I think I'm getting. And then, but the foiling really makes it seem like, oh my gosh, this is like holographic. Like,
and it feels more prestige, right? That's what this card is. It's supposed to be a special card. I do think the official ones are a little bit nicer because I like the color. I think I did not like the puck ones as much. The bounty prestige cards, like you're saying, I felt that the colorless part of them actually. This took away from the card a little bit. And now you actually have to know the aspect symbols a little better. Just like, wait, what aspect is this?
Yeah. And now the propaganda ones, the official ones, I do think look really, really good. So by like comparison, here's a nice little Orn Free Tar level two. And it just, they really, really pop. So like for me with the Carbonite boxes, if I'm 50% of the prestiges, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It doesn't feel great to me.
So interesting you say Orn Free Tar, because I traded one of my showcases to get a number four Orn Free Tar.
Nice.
That I'm going to get in the mail in the next couple of days. So next week, hopefully, I'll have to show you. I've been collecting like number, like special numbers, like 1, 2, 3, or 2, 3, 2, because that's the first serialized card I got, the Executor. And then I've been collecting a lot of fours. So I have like a number four Oppo Rancisis. I have a number four Qui-Gon Jinn. I'm gonna have a number four Orn Free Tar. Like I don't know. I know it's unlucky. I know number four is actually unlucky in like Chinese.
It depends. Culture. Yeah, it depends on the different places, right? But for you, that's your number, so you gotta go for it.
Yeah, man, I'll never be number one, but I could probably become number four.
Number four. Yeah, but like I do. There are some banger cards in here, like commons and uncommons as well. Like that's where the funny thing is. Like that's actually where I'm waffling about it, because it's like, oh, I can get like hyperspaces of like Cinta.
Right.
Gotcha. And since it's also a bounty puck.
Now, we do get a lot. I have noticed we get a lot of legendaries. You guys get a lot of legendaries in your boxes?
Yeah. The
mine were grouped together a lot. I got 7 of the Win More card. What's the Win card? What is that one?
Oh, wow. So you got the 10 cost. It's the 10 cost red villainous.
Confidence and victory or something?
Confidence and victory. Thank you. I'm like, oh, I know what it is. I got 2 hyper foils, 2 hyper spaces, two regulars and one regular foil. I'm like, what is going on?
So I didn't get any of those, and I'm kind of happy about that one, to be perfectly honest. But
yeah,
I actually did not pull any Darth Scions or Darth Treyas, though, which I was very sad about. So it giveth and it taketh away.
Did you guys are you guys just talking from your carbonites, or like, do you open regular booster boxes?
I also open regular
boosters. I have got three booster boxes and two carbonites.
Okay.
And I was one and two.
Mm-hmm. I got a case of regular boosters and one carbonite. And that one has really got a really good spread so far. I mean, I got three Treyas. I got like the three confidence victories. I got two Cassians. Like, I got a pretty good mix. I don't have a playset of all the legendaries and rares. Like, I still don't. Which is like wild to me that you can buy that much product. But I guess it's because they're rare, right? And legendaries are not really supposed to.
I got five of this bad boy.
What is that bad boy?
Darth Nihilus. And two hyper foiled Darth Nihilus.
I think Nihilus is the most expensive one at the moment.
Really? Interesting. Yeah, I pulled five of him. I did pull playsets of like most of the cards.
I didn't pull single Nihilus
before, with the exception of Treya and Scion, though. So I was happy in general with my legendary pulls.
I can't believe that the Darth Nihilus hyperspace foil right now is going around pre-sale like $48.
Are you serious?
That can't be right. That's not going to last that long. That is wild.
No, I don't think it lasts that long, but I think
it's
going to be around that $30 range until we start seeing it played more, and then we'll find out if it's actually going to hold the price or not.
Yeah, I mean, the regular one's going for $17.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it's the most.
There's been a lot of sales. There's been like, 40 sold so far.
I will say it does look really good. Like the foiling catches the lightning that he's doing. His lightsaber pops. Like, it is a really good looking hyperspace. So
people love their KOTOR, man.
Well, yeah, and I was gonna say people love the character, right? So like that always adds to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to be, like, now that we've seen cards in play in a little bit, what do you think is going to be the
like, legendary of this
the
one?
The Anakin of this set.
Padme.
I think you are way too high on Queen. It's Queen Amidala, by the way.
Queen Amidala.
But I think you're way too high on her.
Wait, why do you think you're way too high on her? Tell me more.
Based off of playing against her and playing against her, I just don't think I cared that much when she came out.
Okay.
It didn't impact me at all, really. It was like, it felt like when she came out, they were trying to do things that to not win. It's like as much. I don't know. I just didn't went in the pre-release. Now, this could be completely wrong. I understand, because it was a pre-release and we were only limited to certain cards. And with a constructed deck, it may change a lot.
Yeah.
But
I think that's where you're selling her short.
Yeah. But I was just like, oh, okay. But you gotta have officials. So.
I think when it comes to, I think you're both kind of right in a lot of sense. Queen Amidala, just like to me, it's just for Rob's side. Queen Amidala is a just automatically useful legendary in that, like, it's a green heroism, great. You build the board wide at that point, so you insulate yourself against a lot of things, actually, single target removals or whatever. Power of the Dark Side, etc. You are kind of using your whole turn to do that, but you don't really care. I also agree, though, in just a constructed deck, like, I don't care. Someone played Queen Amidala against me constructed, or the pre-release, and yeah. I was like, oh, whatever. I'm gonna defeat these tokens, and then it's just a three body that, like, I could just kill. I could defeat really easily because it's a three on the bottom. Yeah, so I see both sides of this, actually.
Yeah, I do think she's not as strong in limited and pre-release when you can't build around her, but when you can build around her, I think she becomes a problem.
Yeah, yeah, I actually think that Scion is going to be a very that one is going to be a valuable card.
Interesting.
I think
I do think he's good.
Yeah.
What specifically, though, Gil? Like, what's making you think that he's going to be better than, say, like Amidala or some of these other, like,
Nihilus right now, currently?
Yeah, Nihilus or even like Treya. Cassian, or right?
Well, like, for me, right? What I would do with him especially if I had to play him on turn five resource turn, right? I would imagine that, well, my style is I like to go low. I'm a go low, go hard kind of guy in that sense, in the game style. So for me, I'd be, especially in like a green, in like a green deck, like if I had Super Laser Tech, I'm going to throw that into whatever is on the board, defeat it, get the resource, right? I'm going to start just trading all my units in, and then Scion comes out as at least a 7, 6, 7, 8 potentially. And then at that point, if you defeat him, he just comes right back to my hand anyway, so I didn't actually lose a card. You know what I mean? And you had to do stuff
to get rid of him.
To get rid of him, and I don't care if I'm trading into you, because that's I'm trying to get him strong. And then what ends up happening is the 6 resource turn, you know, like now you have a leader coming out with a 7/7 body already that like is going to return to a hand. And then if you defeat the leader, you can play him again and he just comes out at 6/6. I just like the fact that he has this redundancy thing going on is just really powerful. And I think that like mechanic, if there's a world out there where I think he's really useful in that sense. And the card looks sick.
Yeah.
The card looks sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it, particularly in Gar, he's just a problem, right? Because all you need to do is kill one thing, and then he's just going to keep recurring.
Yeah. He's a 7/7 at all times with Gar. So can you imagine before?
Well, it's a 7/6, but yeah.
No, he would.
Because if you kill one thing, he gets +1/+1, and right, then you get +1 from Gar.
7/6, return him. Right, yep. And just keep playing him, and then so it's a 7/6 on the board before the flip. You ECL in Vaders. I don't know. Who cares?
Sure. Yeah.
That's why. Anyway, so how about you, Corey? What do you think? Like, do you have a?
No. I liked Nihilus initially just because it was a pure black, so it can fit any villainy deck. I do like those, and I think Lando was cool because it was a pure blue, like Anakin was.
Lando. Mm-hmm, Lando's a pretty good one.
But yeah, I don't know. I was leaning towards Nihilus just because of the coolness factor and I do like that ability, even though there's risk to it, being able to just hit, do extra things on your action, right? You're doing extra damage.
I think Nihilus is going to be sick, especially if we see a meta with a lot of weenie units, like Cad, like Cad Weenie.
Mm-hmm.
This guy Nihilus is just gonna clean up right at 7 resource. All right, let me claim blap. Yep. You know, and I could see why that would be. It's already still valuable. Like just the hyperspace itself is selling for $23, which is really good. And there's been sales, you know, for it. So,
yeah. I do think all of the KOTOR units are pretty valuable in this specifically the legendaries, but even some of the non-legendary ones I think are also very good.
It looks like Obi-Wan is actually the most
I got my playset of him too.
Expensive one. Just looking at it now, Obi-Wan's going for $30. Hyperspace
Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are trying to the Satine thing.
Sabe.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to make her work, and he's built for that deck.
I mean, a 4-cost 4/5 is pretty good still.
Oh yeah, 4-cost 4/5, you survive a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
for sure. Just like the Typho, like that Typho card, I think is very valuable, especially after rotation. I know people keep talking, like people talk about it. Can't wait until it gets there. But like Typho, this can't be right, but like his regular card, presale is like $4.
Is he an uncommon or is he a rare?
Well, he's a starter, a special card,
right?
He's
a starter. Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't he
a
special?
Yeah.
That's probably why.
There was a foil card that's selling right now for like $4. There's been three sales. That's crazy.
I believe it though. Typho and like also Ahsoka from that deck. She's for green aggro, probably red green aggro. She feels really strong as well. Mm.
Yeah. Okay. It's well, either way, I think what we could safely say, at least right now, is that the starter cards are it's really nice to get a starter deck in that sense, because like there's going to be useful cards in it anyway. Mm-hmm. You might as well get the starter deck just because especially if you want to teach someone new, bringing someone to the game, it's a product that's kind of worth it. I mean, I get both starter decks every set. So I think that's very helpful.
Yeah, the Padme one in this one is particularly has a lot of particularly good S cards.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's move on to the meta segment. That's okay. Corey, Rob, I think we're going to talk about some limited pre-release stuff. What you got for us?
Well, Jabba Supremacy is what I got for us. You know, we've talked about kind of draft strategies in the, draft strategies in the past. And, you know, looking for specific leaders. And let me tell you, Jabba is really strong, particularly in a limited format. I think he's got legs outside of it too, but in a limited format, this leader is just a problem. He's hard to get rid of. Number one, he's got an 8 butt. And then his both his leader side ability and his flipped ability are just cracked in limited. You just start 2-for-1-ing back to back to back, and it's so hard to stay on the board in an environment where there is very limited single target removal. He just dominates a board, and you can trade or survive, even take something out. Like, he's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty backbreaking, and there's just so many good villainy vigilance cards in this set.
Yes.
I mean, like, and not only some of them are just like commons and stuff, like, or uncommons, like Cantwell Arrestor Cruiser, the 7 cost ship, capital ship, is amazing.
It's the 6/7 that, like, tap something down permanently.
Yeah, it's like if you have Jabba and that card, like, game's over, because you just shut down whatever big unit they have, and they're not going to kill that. They're not going to defeat that in space. There's no hard removal. Like, it's really hard to, like, get rid of that ship.
It's the one hard removal that is really strong here is the it's the one that if you attack base, you retaliate, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
It's like, so if you have a unit that attacks base, you can then play it and then it kills it. So, like, yeah,
You have to hope that you draw that one card and you also get it in a sealed thing. It's like, you know,
a lot of things that have to happen perfectly to line up for you to get that to go off. Yeah.
But that's like the most useful, like, and it is a common, to be fair. But it like, that's the, in honesty, that's like the most useful single target removal.
Retaliation.
Right now. Yeah. Retaliation. That's what it is.
It just sucks that it's like reactive. Like, you have to wait. You have to get your base hit first and then defeat something. It's just like, it feels bad. But Corey, you played Jabba during your pre-release. How did it feel for you?
So I did the one pre-release and I played them. I was trying to figure out which color to pair him with, right? Which aspect. And it seemed like every aspect worked pretty well. But in a pre-release meta, I wanted to go as fast as possible, right? I was like, you want to go aggro, right? So I went with the red and it worked out pretty well. Your game against you, that match was rough, because I was like, oh, this is going to go. The first game, I was like, oh, I got him easy, no problem. And then you sideboarded well. I feel like you really figured him out and were able to mitigate a lot of the things that Jabba was trying to do. So yeah, that was cool.
I had to get big very fast.
Yeah. Then Luthen was perfect for that, like trading up all the time. Like that was great. That was great. But I did get to play Condemn against you, which was like the highlight of the highlight of my time. God. And so, I didn't even have a blue villain card in my hand at the time. I did draw like the aspect I needed, because I can show two cards, right? You just have to disclose them both. But I didn't have both colors at the time, so. But it was fun. I was like, yes, got him.
So Condemn is a new card. It's an upgrade card. It's
good.
It's three costs.
0/0 upgrade. But
0/0 upgrade. Yeah. But it forces an opponent, like if on attack, when the opponent is attacking, you as a defender can show like a blue-blue-black.
No, it's just blue-black.
It's just blue and black.
I'm thinking about the ship.
The ship is blue-blue-black.
So it's just a blue-black, and it's a -6 to attack. And you get rid of all abilities. So think about like red 5 that does extra damage.
Yep.
Like, nope, goes away. Mm-hmm. Like, you just
overwhelm
shut down.
Overwhelm doesn't matter.
shut down Poe.
Saboteur. Like, you can't get no Saboteur.
I think Saboteur is the one thing that does happen because it happens before you have to select the target before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you have to select the target before you use the one attack. So that's the only one that does.
Is that
trigger?
Is that judge approved?
I think I did actually read it was a judge decision on that
Interesting.
One.
Interesting. Okay. That is the one that
does still trigger because of where it happens in the stack. Mm.
But like, yeah, well, all the when defeated stuff or
on attack, things. anything else.
Bye.
Anything else?
Sentinel. Get rid of Sentinel.
Yeah it's real good.
What other, so I don't want to talk about Jabba for the next 25 minutes. So what other, I mean, we could, but what other leaders have you guys seen have been really effective or cards? Well, we'll start with leaders. Let's talk with like maybe one or two leaders and then we'll go into cards.
So I've only played in one pre-release, just life for lack of a better way to describe it. I did play with, Daedra, and she's interesting in a limited environment because you're probably not triggering the damage very often, but you are drawing a lot of cards with her, which if you have a deck that has like a bunch of singletons is actually really interesting in the games that so I actually ended up playing against Gil in my final game, and like you two owed me, but like both games were very, very close, and part of it was because we were like I had solutions in hand, right? So I was able to slow you down a little bit through there, and I just needed that like little bit to kind of get over the edge. She's interesting. I don't think she's as good as there, but the other one that I do see coming around a lot, Satine. And it's because that restore 4 is huge. And then there's a lot of other restore in this set. So it makes it really hard to like get over that, you know, get over the hump with her.
Okay.
Or against her, I guess.
No, I think that's fair. I think Satine is very interesting. It's like instead of going aggro, you're going control-y, like with like heals. So I totally get that. Corey, I think you only also did one pre-release, but now that you've gotten some games under your belt, do you think Jabba's the only answer, or do you think there might be...
If we're talking like sealed pre-release stuff currently, I did see like a lot of Mon Mothma getting played.
Yeah,
and that's a common leader, so you're going to open Mon Mothmas more. And there are, we mentioned, a lot of good green hero cards in this set. So you have the Queen Amidala, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, and you could have Figures of Unity. That's a great upgrade in that set. So I noticed there's some pretty nice green cards that were available to that leader. And the powers is pretty good, too. Like, you're... What does she do again?
It takes out the aspect penalty for
the officials, right?
Officials.
So you can put in officials that are non-villainous,
I guess.
Well, non-villainous, right? So from like the red, the yellow, the green, well, blue, I should say. And if you're pairing it with the other colors, you get more officials in there.
Yeah.
Which will help with your Queen Amidala again.
No, I love that because I think, you know, that helps fill your curve. Like you just have options.
And there's
I played
so
Mon
many
Mothma,
officials.
I played Mon Mothma in the thing. I had blue cards, yellow cards. I had all types of stuff in there. So I had a lot of options with her. So I totally agree. It's like
and she comes out early in a 3-7. Like that's a great stat line.
Yeah, it's the Quinlan stat line.
Especially if you have upgrades with plot. So you could probably get like plot armor. you know, I think that's just really powerful. I think a really interesting leader that if I got her, I think I would actually use her. It all depends on the card mix, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think one that's really that could be really powerful is Governor Price, actually.
Ooh, so another one.
Of token generation.
Well, yeah, to be fair, you don't need a lot of token generation. You just need a couple, a little bit. But what I mean that is like, so I played Lutha and I played Mon Mothma, I played Jabba and I played, what was the other one?
Bail, probably?
Daedra.
Oh, Daedra.
I played all those leaders this past weekend and I did really well, like overall, right? But I never got a Rinda Price or Governor Price. And the reason I think she's interesting is because one of the issues you have with sealed events or limited, right, is that it's hard to fill your curve. Like, what do you try? Well, how do you f- fill, how could you do what you need to do? And I think that the ability to just ready something with that, do something with that extra, that spare
hanging resource.
Yeah. Hanging resource,
yeah,
is just powerful, right? If someone's, you know, someone could potentially, they don't spend it, you can, and you could do something for two, like get two extra damage on base, for example, or two to defeat a unit. Huge. That causes huge turns. And then on the back end, obviously, yeah, like Rob said, like you want to have tokens, like obviously.
And you're creating token, right? You create a token.
Yeah, you create a token. But each ready friendly, this unit gets plus one for each ready friendly unit, token unit. She can become immensely powerful later in the game, which I think is really helpful. Anyway, so I think she can be sneaky. I don't think she's a tier one, but I think she'd be sneaky.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit like when we were looking at Legends of the Forest late set, people started coming around on Grand Inquisitor, who most people saw as garbage. But it's like, if you drew if you drafted or opened the right cards with him, he was just impossible to deal with in a limited environment. And yeah. I imagine it's a little bit of that.
Yeah, the corrupted saber or whatever just made it impossible. Yeah.
I could see that too. And being a rare leader, you do want to synergize well with whatever cards you get. So a lot of times you either go big or you're not going to use it at all. Like, I think Dryden would be interesting as well in a sealed pool, because you get that ambush online almost all the time as much as you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Dryden's a little bit hard in a sealed environment, because like I feel like with him, the loop you want to do is like discard a big thing to give something small ambush and then later recur that out of your graveyard. And there's not really recursion in this set.
Right. And that's the issue, because especially if you have a 30 card deck, you're going to deck yourself fast.
Yeah.
Just got to add those cards in there. Go bigger.
Yeah. There's not like any... So it's really weird specific combo, but like a really expensive law card that would make Orin Free worth it with him, you know, yeah. Like probably not that's too combo-y. Yeah, I think it's, oh, Leia. I've seen Leia do really well too.
Really?
Because you could just put the token on her and she just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I like, maybe I just can't see it. Cause like, I feel like, I guess you just have to play a lot of like single, what do you call it? Like a single color units, so that you can trigger it, and then you just keep giving it to her. And then, but it to me, that's kind of weird, because then you're like, you have to play a bunch of stuff that's like out of aspect, or at least like is, you know, your other color, but not heroic, and then you're banking on that. I guess I don't know. It just feels a little weird.
It's not as hard as you think.
Okay.
To do.
I just gotta try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I think that, again, it's a tempo filler that, like, yep, you have a curve filler, you have one experience, or you have one resource to be able to get two stats worth on something on the board. And you do that every turn. There's a, you know, you hold a card that you might not want to spend right away, and just pop, 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 pop. And you're always going to get experience points. And again, there's really hard to remove, like, they're going to waste upgrade removal on it, which means that like when she comes out, you could do the plot armor, like again, or do whatever you want. And she's, you know, all your units are really powerful. I saw it happen in a couple games. I haven't actually played with it, but I think there's some sneakiness there that could catch people unaware in the limited format, I think.
Absolutely. It's one of those that you don't think is going to be as impactful initially, but once you see it live and it's working, you're like, oh no, this is going to be rough to get through, because now every turn you know that they're going to be adding experience.
Yeah, and that's like the problem that in the last set, it was like, how do you deal with Snoke? How do you deal with Obi, right? Like if they get that snowball going, and again, that was another set with very limited removal, what do you do?
Yeah, especially if you can put it, like you said, Gil, put it on her. It's real good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge.
Are there cards that you're like looking to build around in a sealed thing?
Let me think about this. The one.
I mean, if you draw Cinta.
For me, the one card that I really like, I mean, you know, Cinta's okay. don't get me wrong, it's fine. I had her for a game and I never really used her, or I had her for one of my decks. I actually never really used that card. I kind of like forgot about it. One card that has saved what I thought was amazing, especially with my strategy. I'm always about like, let me go wide so you have to deal with too many things. Renowned Dignitaries is like single-handedly just won me matches, because it's a 6 cost, command heroism, 5/6, so it's a really beefy body. It's an official, has overwhelm, but it's when played ability. Heal 2 damage from your base for each friendly official unit. So the turn before, I had like Mon Mothma, for example. I probably played Beloved Orator. I probably have like a bunch of officials already. And I slap this dude down at 6 resources and I just heal 10.
It's that's like, so nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the next turn, like, I don't know, I do the Grassroots Resistance card, which is the 4 cost heroism, 3 damage, thing. 3 heal. It's just like it's really hard to cut. Like, you talk about Restore from Satine, like, I don't need Satine if I'm going to just play him, and then I'm just whacking you, like, all over the place.
Or maybe really... you do both.
Or, yes, or exactly, do both. Anyway, that one card, I love it. I could just
definitely
be my one
got
experience.
Played against me in our match, and I was like, oh no, this is right. And I was like, wait, how did you get down to 0? I was like, oh no.
And I played it wrong because I didn't realize he counts as an official.
Oh, yeah. So he heals just 2.
I mean, because, as soon as you play it down, you get at least 2 heals, right?
Yeah. So. What about you guys?
I really like Beguile. It's just Waylay Plus. It's really nice.
So tell me more about the Waylay Plus side about it.
So there is a downside to it, but so it's a 3 cost just like Waylay, it's a bounce just like Waylay, but at the start of it you actually get to look at your opponent's hand, and then the limitation is that you can only bounce something that is 6 cost or less. Only 6 cost or less. It's just better Waylay. It's so good.
Yeah.
That's strong. I liked when I was playing in the pre-release, I really actually liked it just as a common like cost card, the Academy Disciplinarian. I thought that card was amazing. It was a 3 cost aggression card. A 3/4. When played, you may deal 1 damage to a friendly unit with 2 or less and power and ready it. So like I was constant in with Jabba, I was constantly doing that because Jabba has 2 or less, and Dryden has 2 or less power initially. So you can actually play him and ready a unit that you've already attacked with, like, and then you combo that up with like the Republic Starfighter red card that's got grit. It's like a 2/3 space unit with grit, so you play that, you can play him, you ready that one, now it's got an extra damage on it or extra attack on it. I thought that card was really cool to synergize with a lot of the low cost cards and stuff as a common card.
I agree, and it's hard to defeat because of the 4 body, like the 3,
it's got a good body
ends.
Too
yeah.
Another one that's kind of like that I was very surprised at how useful it is the, it's called the Regulations Bureaucrat. So it's the 2 cost single yellow 0/5. As a turn 1 play, this thing is bonkers. It just has an action, exhaust a resource.
Yeah.
So you're like, you have to throw so much stuff into it, you very likely exhaust 2 resources before they can deal with it. And you're keeping them below curve the entire time. It feels really good.
I never thought about that. Yeah. That is, because I had that card, I didn't want to play it.
As a turn 1 play, it's really, really strong. Like, later, it definitely tapers off, but if you have it for that turn 1, it feels really good.
Wow. Because then you at the 3 resource turn, you just tap it, and they have to play a 2 cost.
Yeah. And then you probably have initiative, or, like, you may or may not have initiative, but, like, and again, it's 5, it has 5 health, so it's really hard to just straight up kill with most turn 1 and 2 plays, like, combined.
Just constantly tap it immediately, like with initiative. That is so silly.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay. Any last? We'll go one more card. Is there any other cards that you guys? Any more cards that you guys are really interested in?
Yeah, the Figure of Unity, I think, again, it's a legendary, so we're going from common to legendary here, but Figure of Unity as an upgrade was seemed really good from what I saw. I didn't get to experience it live, but playing it in person in on other means here has been better than I expected it to be, because I was like, it's gonna be okay, but it's actually proven or seems to be a lot stronger than I expected. So I think that card is going to be a card you can build around in a sealed deck if you get that, for sure.
Yeah, I think in a sealed deck, I mean, I did it with Mon Mothma. Was great.
Oh, you
I
had
actually to. I actually did pull it with a Mon Mothma.
So oh, I mean, that feels really good. I mean, if you get Mon Mothma with Mon Mothma and Figure of Unity, so
yeah, it was brutal, because like I kept forgetting it's three different keywords.
Yeah.
So like you have to you're doing more damage, you're healing something, and you get over. Like I was like, what am I? I gotta stop playing this card. I'm getting confused. I agree. That card is fantastic. If you get it, that's something definitely to build around, because it goes on any unique unit. So it could be like Mina Bonteri.
Yep.
That Mina Bonteri is really big. Turn two. Like, what are they going to do
again,
about it? You know?
In the sealed deck, is you don't have access to as much removal or like straight up, you know, damage that you can just deal in one shot. So. It's good. Yeah. And it's a two. It's about three costs. Command heroism, 2+2+ with overwhelm, raid one, and restore one keywords.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
But I was gonna say there's one that I haven't drawn, but I think actually might be really good and limited. And I'm hoping like to at some point when I'm doing a limited event draw this one and give it a shot. I think Hired Slicer might be really good. So Hired Slicer is a 3-cost 3/4 that on attack you reveal the top two cards of a deck. You can choose yours, you can choose your opponent's. If you do, you may exhaust a unit that shares a trait with the revealed cards, and then those cards get buried at the bottom of the deck that you reveal them from. So you're doing two things with it in addition to just attacking. You're scrying very likely your opponent's deck. You're burying things that they may potentially want. Now you could, in that regard, I know Gil, you kind of feel like sometimes if you're doing those, you might help them draw into something. But then because there's so many shared, like there's so many officials, for example, in this deck, like there's a very high likelihood you're going to hit something that's going to do there, and then you get to exhaust on top of it. So I do really think that it could be a very interesting, very powerful card.
What was the card again? And
it's Hired Slicer.
Hired Slicer.
What's the aspect?
Yellow, single yellow. So it also goes in either right. Heroic or villainous.
Okay, cool. Yeah, all right. I think it's a great card to end on because it does something unique. And so let's go on to the last segment. We're going to talk about deck building. Set six, well, it's oriented around set six, but we'll talk about like best practices and everything like that about it. So I'll go first. I think that like when we think about deck building, one of the main things you really want to think about is get an identity. Like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to be, what archetype are you trying to be? And what leader is going to fit that archetype? Like, sometimes some leaders are not meant to be, like Satine. I don't think she's going to be an aggro leader. So don't try to build an aggro deck with Satine. You can try.
Now.
I mean, I'm thinking about like just deck building so that you can win some games and have some fun while also having some fun. I think that's one of the first things you really want to think about is what are you trying to do? And then looking at the leader that has an ability that matches that. So I think that is really critical. And there's a lot of ratios about that you can get into. But I'm actually curious, like, are there any like principles for deck building that you guys prescribe to or subscribe to?
Yeah, well, for like sealed specifically, if we talk about back to like a pre-release or a sealed event, I try to look at how many of the aspect cards I actually have in that sealed package, right? So that way you can see where you could be stronger or not. Like if I only have three of a card in one color, it's not great if I'm going to try to build a 30 card deck. But if I got like 15 cards in that color, it makes it a little bit easier to say, all right, I need to lean into this and see. Then I compare it to what leader I might want if you're talking sealed. When it comes to constructed, how do I want to play? Like you said, what is your deck doing? What do you want to try to do with a deck? And so I'm going to try and make sure I want to be more on the control-y side, I'm going to look at those leaders first. And then what colors will pair well with those leaders?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with what both of you guys are saying. I mean, truthfully, Gil, I really ascribe to what you're talking about. And it's like, it's all about focus in your deck. More than anything else, you need to pick something that you want to do well. A good example of this that I've been toying around with, although the deck did let me down today, but I ran into a lot of bad matchups for it, is what I've been toying around with, and what Zach from Deadpool on our servers has been toying around with, is this Thrawn 4 yellow deck. That deck focuses on when defeated abilities. So almost every card in my deck either defeats cards, has a when defeated ability, or is somehow playing into that strategy. And like, I actually didn't win games tonight, but everything I was doing felt like it was working the way I intended it to. And part of it is I think there's like a learning curve for me on that, on this deck that I need to just kind of get through. But like, everything felt like it was clicking, and it wasn't like, I wasn't trying to force it. And that to me, you know, is because I'm focusing very much on that when defeated strategy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. And when it clicks, it clicks. Like today, I brought in an Obi-Wan. Well, so a deck I've been working on has been Obi-Wan from Legends of the Force, with a Force base. And today, I'll be honest. So sorry, Joe. I've actually played zero games of Obi-Wan for like the past, like this Obi-Wan ever. I've never played a game as Obi-Wan.
But wow, I just only have a lot, Twilight I, Obi-Wan, huh?
Yeah, only Twilight Obi-Wan. But I have strong opinions about it because I played Rey with the same color combination using the same like template. But I brought it over to Obi-Wan today. Like, I've officially gotten my first matches with it. And the thing that I was trying to accomplish was, all right, I'm a mid-range deck, so I need to like be able to really ramp up and get to like 6, 7, 8 and win by that range, which I did successfully. But the thing that I wanted to test and the thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to shut down ping decks. So today I brought in Cassian Andor, 2-cost units, even though they're not force, and I brought them into the deck and I dominated with them because people couldn't do anything. What are you going to do? You can't use your red 5 ability on me. You can't ping me with Padme. You can't ping me with Cad Tarkintown. You can't do anything like that.
So you were going green, blue?
Yeah, green, blue. Green, blue, and it was okay to not have the force when I needed it because I was trying to do something. I was trying to my goal was to play this deck, but with the idea of shutting down ping decks. And I didn't get to play like Cad, but I did play like Padme. But also, you know, there was other things I wanted to do, like I wanted to be able to trade into ground units.
Right.
So like I would entrench it. It became 5/5. You know, like,
wow, that's I like that. That's yeah, rough. That's cool. Yeah.
You know, always clearing the ground. They can't trade in. They have to go to base, and I'll just keep defeating whatever's on the board. So anyway, that's the things that I'm trying to do. Like, what mechanics am I trying to test? That's what I really think about. I don't know, but do you guys do that kind of approach when you're building a deck?
A little bit. Like tonight, I actually didn't play with a sideboard because I wanted to see how the deck play. This is the Thrawn deck specifically. How the Thrawn deck played. Just, I have all the cards in front of me. I have this idea of what it is, and I want to see how it gets executed. You know, with just that, you know, not trying to sub things out and do, you know, confuse myself with it. It's just like, I just want to see what happens if I sneak attack with Krennic out on the board. If I sneak attack a Legacy Run on turn two. What does that look like? The answer is it's pretty gross, but
yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely think again, it's about focus and leaning into what makes the deck run and what makes it work. Like, you know, with the Palpatine deck that I've been playing, Palpatine Yellow, it's green and yellow combination. So how do those aspects play into each other and work together? And what's the end game, right? It's like when you teach a board game, like teach a game like a board game, whatever. It's like you want to teach them how to win first. Mm-hmm. So how does your deck win? If you don't know how your deck is going to win, you're going to just be muddling around until you lose. So yep. you need to know what your end game is and how you can get there before dying, right? Before you die. So what can you do to get to that point? And that's where, like with Palpatine, I'm trying to get to these big bodies. I'm trying to delay some of the stuff that you're doing. And then once I get to those big bodies, then I just overwhelm you and I try to gain board control. Because what Palp is doing when he flips is he takes something of yours and now it's mine. And so now I've just two for one, basically, because now I have a leader and one of your units and you've lost a unit. And so my goal is to make sure when I flip with Palpatine, I am going to have board control, right? And yeah. so and know your end game, know how to get there and what can prevent you from losing before you get there.
Yeah,
I think that's a good one of the things that you mentioned, like the two for one-ing. I will say, like, as a tangent to that, before Rob, I know you wanted to say something. I think one thing that's really important is card quality, right? You need to not just have cards in your hand, but like the quality of the card, the value you can get with it. Like, really think about those kinds of cards before you put them in your deck, because there's a lot of cards that, like, you know, the slave card, it's like 3/5 body, but it does nothing else, right? Should you put in a different card that has a several stats but actually does something? Like, I would consider doing something like that, right?
Exactly.
Quality yeah. is where it's at. Sorry, Rob, I feel like you want to say something.
Yeah, well, you actually hit on something else to kind of talk about, but there are two things to kind of, you'll sometimes hear these terms thrown around. So Corey was saying, you know, what's your win condition? You also hear it called win con. So, like, understanding what your win con is very, very important to how you build a deck. And then best in slot. So this is what you're referring to, Gil. So the card at the cost that is going to give you the most value amongst all the cards that you could potentially add in. So like a 3-cost card, what am I going to, you're talking about this, I can't remember the first part, but the slaves card, the generic 3/5.
The berated slaves.
yeah. Liberated slaves. Correct. So, but you know, in the decks that it was being played in, the reason it was considered a best in slot is because at the cost and the stat block that you got, it was very, you know, compelling. And in a double yellow deck where you had a bunch of other things that could, like, you know, either tap things down or, you know, it could stay out there long enough. It was really, really good. Mm-hmm. But one of the other things I do want to talk about is, and you're kind of touching on this a little bit, Corey, as well, is we're talking about building decks, maybe with a new concept, but what do you do when you have like a deck that you've been playing and now new cards are released? Right. So, I mean, I know what I kind of do here, but like, Gil, what do you try to think about when you're doing that?
I think about the problems I had. So like, I know, for example, with the blue-green combo, sometimes it can have a rough time against, well, heroism specifically, not so much villainy. It can have a hard time with some of these aggro decks, just like stabilizing the board, because aggro does, like, it's really hard to stop them sometimes. And then there's also the control side. But before I even get to control side, I'm going to talk about aggro. So like with the Obi-Wan deck that I played tonight, I know that it is a weakness is space, right? And there wasn't much for me to do there aside because their cards already existed. However, I was acutely aware that Cinta is going to be a problem. You talk about it. You've talked about in the past with you get to do Boba Fett and then you get to do Cinta, like, and then just attack, right? So one thing that I specifically did with my deck in order to address those problems was like, okay, space aggro is pretty rough. What synergizes well with that? Graceful Purgle. So like, I actually had two Graceful Purgles in the sideboard so that if I had to face a space deck, like a Boba or a Luke Pilot or whatever, I throw that in there. It synergizes perfectly with Ezra Bridger, the 3/5 body. It also synergizes with Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan makes that a 3/8, huge. You know what I mean? That's defeating anything. But going back into it, what Cinta, right? The thing that really cinched it was the new Galen Erso. I was like, all right, I'm gonna play this card. I'm gonna at least have one or two of them, not three, just to see if I feel like I like it. And every game I played it just felt amazing. So like I just think of those anyway. So that's how I do it. I think about my problems and what if the new cards can solve those problems,
mm-hmm.
and put in like one or two just to test it before I throw in like three.
Yeah. And like, so from my standpoint, like you're talking about anti-Boba tech and I was thinking about, okay, what makes Boba better? Right. So, one of the things that I was keying in on, and some of these were fairly obvious when you saw the cards released, like obviously Cinta is just like, it's money in the Boba deck. Like you get to swing with your pilot leader when you flip them. And it takes away one of the biggest weaknesses that you have with a pilot leader, in that there's a chance for your opponent to just straight up remove them with upgrade removal. And it takes that out of the way. So you're like, all right, yeah, that's like a three of instantly. I know that's going into it. But then there were some, I added two other cards into it. Shout out to my partner, Sam. She crushed it tonight at Locals playing this deck. With some of the ads that I put into this. The other two things that I added in were Punishing One. And Punishing One, again, when you see it, it's kind of a no-brainer. But seeing it played out on the board, it's actually terrifying. So first of all, so Boba flips on six. Punishing One is a five cost, which means you can play it ahead of when he will flip out. Now, the other thing that it does is whenever, for every damaged enemy on the board, I believe it gains raid one. So, or it's plus one, one of the two. So Boba is pinging the board and you just put this thing out there. You've probably pinged some other things on the board because you've been doing a lot of indirect damage. And then you put Boba out on top of it and then he just turns into a monster.
Yeah, so I think what you're saying is that like you're trying to find the strengths instead of my I was finding weaknesses. You're trying to find strengths and making it even stronger.
Yeah,
like what cards are trying to do those things? Corey, do you subscribe to any of these or do you do your own thing? You're like, nah.
No, I kind of a combination of both. Right, you need to see what cards are out there and how. Like what I'm thinking of is, I love this deck. How are people going to now play these new cards to counter what I've done? And then what do I need to do to be able to manage that and counter those?
Some 4D chess right there. I'm doing something. They're going to do something, so I'm going to do something back.
I know that you know.
Exactly. But there's a real, I know we're getting close to time for our cast here, but for deck building specifically, we talked about curve a lot. I don't know if we actually went and explained what curve is, but when we're building decks, the curve is super important because you talked about, you know, tapping a resource. When you're playing your cards, when you build your deck, you're having specific resource-costed cards in that deck. And if you're just playing, like, I just love this card because it's so strong. If you're only playing really strong cards, you're never going to get to play them early. You're not going to be able to do anything, right? So when you're deck building, you really kind of want to make sure that you have 10 to 12, if you want even more, like 13, 14, turn one plays in your deck, right? And those turn one plays are going to be like one cost, two cost cards, most likely, or something that can get you there. So building a deck initially, try to make sure that you will not put yourself in a position where you don't have anything to do in the first two turns, because those turns are going to really dictate what that game looks like.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's super important. And then once you have those turn one plays, what's your turn two play? What's your turn three play? And how many of those cards fit into your deck? Because again, we don't want to start drawing cards that are not going to work. We talk about best in slot. Those are best in slot for a reason, because we want to get them when it's on the curve that we are playing, right? So getting the percentage of those cards, it's something that you kind of have to... You can net deck something, which means look up a deck that does real well, see what card costs are in there and how many of each card costs in there, and kind of go from there and then adjust as, you know, as you need it. But I think that's one of the big things to really look at when you're building a deck. Also, you just don't want to throw all these legendaries in. They might not fit where you want them to. You do need to see what the costs are.
It's also why like one cost cards are very important. So, you know, something like Daring Raid, it's great because it's a curve filler. Sometimes you either don't want to play a card that's going to use all of your resources, and having something that's like cheap that you can kind of do something with is always great as well.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? We're going to running out of time, and I feel like this section, we could talk about this forever, but we're going to stop here. We're talking, we talked about some high level stuff. We talked about Curve. We're going to make this like a series. We'll talk about deck building for like at least another week or two. Let's expand on this. I think it's going to be very helpful, because especially for this new set, and there's new players and everything like that. It's just really good information. I hope that if you're listening, you found this helpful. Please remember to like, subscribe. Rob, Corey, thank you again for your time, as always. And until next time, everybody, may the force be with you.